The Mendocino Complex fire is the largest recorded fire complex in California history. It's the large complex of two wildfires, the River Fire and the Ranch Fire, currently burning in Mendocino Lake, Colosso, Glen counties, and the state of California. The Ranch Fire is currently burning 8 miles northeast of Ukiah, and the River Fire is currently burning 6 miles north of Hoplin. First reported in July of 2018, the fires have burned a combined total of 459,000 acres, and it is still burning. That's one of the stories Linda Moulton Howe will have next on Coast to Coast AM. Well, she's back. Linda Moulton Howe, Emmy Award-winning producer, investigative reporter, and, of course, a regular here on Coast to Coast. She took a couple months off for the summer. Linda, the fan mail kept pouring in.
Well, thank you. I am glad, and it is really nice to be back with Coast after some productive both work and play.
Good.
And, you know, August has come as a month filling up with headlines in every direction.
Oh, my God, yeah.
I don't think I can remember a month that it was like this. And the New York Times front page above the fold on August 10th headline that 2018 is the year that, quote, global warming turned climate model into menace. Crops wilt, fires rage, and the scorching summer tells us we're not ready, meaning not ready for this, close quote. 5 days later in the New York Times on August 15th, there was an op-ed feature by Thomas Friedman who asked, quote, what if all the extreme weather this year linked to global climate change gets even worse and more costly? If you look at all the destructive extreme weather buffeting the world this summer of 2018, and then Friedman lists what makes this year different from all previous years. Europe has baked in unrelenting heat as high as 40 degrees Celsius, which is 104 degrees Fahrenheit. The extreme heat and drought have turned once green fields to brown. Raging fires in Greece killed 91 people. British Columbia in Canada has had 460 new wildfires break out in one single day. Sweden has had terrible wild forest fires that are extending north into the Arctic Circle, wherein this August temperatures have reached 86 degrees Fahrenheit. And there the thinning and breaking up of the Arctic sea ice has reached even the coldest Arctic parts this year. And this is for the first time on record. Waters north of Greenland that are normally frozen even in northern hemisphere summers are warming and opening up. Japan has had the heaviest rainfall ever recorded and the highest temperature ever recorded, 106 degrees Fahrenheit in Kumagaya, northwest of Tokyo. Death Valley in California reached 127 degrees Fahrenheit, breaking its own heat record. In July, the Carr Fire erupted in Redding, California, sending a 100-foot-high wall of flame through the town, causing mandatory evacuations of 92,000 residents and killed two firefighters. And this August, the Mendocino Complex Fire is the largest in California history. It now exceeds 400,000 acres, half the size of Rhode Island, and is still burning. Some climate scientists think we've already reached the tipping point where uncontrolled warming takes over Earth. Places will become uninhabitable if increasingly hot house Earth becomes the reality. But why are wildfires so ferocious in 2018? I took that question to Kevin Trenberth, PhD, the distinguished senior scientist at the National Center for Atmospheric Research in Boulder, Colorado. Dr. Trenberth is an international expert on global warming and shared in the 2007 Nobel Peace Prize for his longtime lead author contributions to the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. Here now from NCAR in Boulder, Colorado, is Dr. Kevin Trenberth.
We have clear information that the carbon dioxide in the atmosphere has increased by over 40%, and over half of that increase has occurred since 1985. So the rate of increase is actually accelerating, going up rather than declining. So this creates a blanket It cuts down on the escape of the Earth's radiation back into space, and so it warms the planet. And so this energy imbalance, where does the extra energy go? 92% of it ends up in the ocean, and we can measure that quite well. And so the ocean heat content is going relentlessly upwards since the 1980s in particular. There are small dips with El Niños, but they're very small. And if you want a single indicator that the planet is warming, it's the global ocean heat content. So 2017 is by far the warmest year on record for the planet as a whole, and that really means it's the warmest year on record for the oceans as a whole.
And Dr. Trenberth, it was only on August 6th to 7th of 2018, there was a headline, they measured the hottest temperature in the ocean off of San Diego ever recorded.
And that's true. So it's been very hot just off the coast there, and it's been very hot in Los Angeles. In fact, it's been very hot in many places around the world. And so coming back to my theme about where does the heat go, a lot of it goes into the ocean. A certain amount of it, a small fraction, goes into melting ice. So Arctic sea ice is decreasing. Greenland is melting. Antarctica is melting. But then the key question in this case is, what about land? So it's in drought or dry conditions that the heat can accumulate enough to make a difference. This applies in California, which is what is called a Mediterranean climate. It tends to be hot and dry in the summertime, and it's not just California, of course. It's very much the Mediterranean countries, and they've had major heat waves and wildfires as well in Portugal, in Spain, in Greece. There have been massive wildfires this summer as well. And, of course, it's not confined to California in the West Coast region. There's a lot of wildfires at the moment up in Alaska, and there have been major wildfires earlier in Colorado and throughout the West, Oregon, Washington. And so all of these regions are characterized by having had relatively dry conditions. And so what happens in that case is that we've got this bit of extra heat, and we can actually measure what that is. And it turns out to be 1 watt per square meter on a global basis. If you accumulate that over a month, that comes to 720 hours in a month. So that's equivalent to 720 watts per square meter over 1 hour. So that's the amount of extra energy you accumulate over a month. A square meter is fairly large, so let's break that down into, say, 10 square feet. That's about what it is. And so 720 watts over 1 square foot for 6 minutes. 720 watts is the power of a small microwave oven. So this is equivalent to running a small microwave oven at full power for every square foot over 6 minutes. So no wonder things catch on fire.
Wow. And sir, in the New York Times, it says, quote, wheat production in many countries of the European Union are predicted to decline this year. In Britain, wheat yields are projected to hit a five-year low. German farmers say their grain harvests are likely to be lower than normal. In Sweden, record high temperatures have left fields parched and farmers scrambling to find fodder for their livestock. The president of the Federation of Swedish Farmers said in an interview that his group estimated at least $1 billion in agricultural sector losses this year. Quote, we get quite a few phone calls from farmers who are lying awake at night and worrying about this is an extreme situation that we have not seen before, close quote.
Yes. In Europe, they haven't experienced these kind of hot, dry conditions anything like as often as we're apt to get them in North America.
It also cites that El Salvador, where farmers in the eastern side of El Salvador have a failure of their corn harvest this summer as temperatures, quote, soared to a record 107 degrees Fahrenheit or about 41 degrees Celsius, and the skies there were rainless for up to 40 days.
Yes, it's not just El Salvador, it's many other parts. I mean, in Japan, in the first part of July, they had one of the worst floods on record, and then after, the first 10 days, they suddenly went into record high temperatures. And The whole of Honshu, the temperature was over 30 degrees Celsius, 86 degrees Fahrenheit. And in Tokyo, they had temperatures up to over 41 degrees Celsius, which was by far the highest on record.
This was higher than 104 degrees.
Yeah, so this was 105, 106 degrees.
Now, Daniel Swain is a climate scientist at the University of California in Los Angeles. And he was quoted saying, "We are living in a world that is not just warmer than it used to be. We have not reached a new normal. This is not a plateau," close quote.
Oh, that's very much true. People seem to think that with climate change, we're sort of going from one climate to another. But that's not what's happening. Climate change is actually destabilizing. It means you can't plan sensibly for the future because the change is the biggest factor.
Live Science on August 6th headlined, "The planet is dangerously close to the tipping point for a hot house Earth." And then it says, quote, "Though the scientists don't know exactly what this threshold is, they say it could be as slight as 2 degrees Celsius, around 4 degrees Fahrenheit, of warming above pre-industrial levels," close quote. Dr. Trenberth, when do we reach that level of 4 degrees Fahrenheit increase that means our planet would tip into an everyday, every year warming planet?
Yeah, so the signs are already here. By about the 2050s is when the carbon dioxide will have doubled from pre-industrial levels and temperatures will be above 2 degrees Celsius, so that's 3.5 degrees Fahrenheit above pre-industrial levels. And that's the kind of level that scientists have really been worrying about, because that's the point where plants no longer grow where they currently grow. Forests won't be able to grow back if they're burned down. Farmers will have to grow different crops. The dislocation starts to become really severe and widespread. And so this is something to avoid if we can possibly do that.
If that comes to be in the 2050s, does it mean that there would then be perpetual wildfires in all of the West, and in other parts of the world, there would be extreme drought and perhaps extreme flooding, all of these extremes, and they would not stop?
Yes, so the weather certainly becomes more violent. We certainly get an increase in extremes, heavier rainfall events, a greater risk of flooding. We have longer dry spells and hotter dry spells. And so then the question is, can you adequately plan for these kind of things? We have failed to manage the growth of cities.
If by 2050 we haven't gotten a control on fossil fuel burning and we tip into an ever-increasing hotter planet, is the surface of the Earth at that point unlivable for most humans and animals?
We have major shortages of water, and there are increasing shortages of food because we can't grow the crops where we currently do. And as a result, there are people who are hungry, environmental refugees. There are conflicts that break out. We've seen some of that mainly because of the war in Syria and so on, especially throughout Europe, and the pressure that refugees put on other economies. But this is apt to become the sort of thing that becomes widespread by about the 2050s or thereabouts as a consequence of climate change. The general standards of living go down and the conflicts become endemic. But there are going to be rich people in various places who build walls and protect themselves from it. The other thing we need to mention is that sea level is rising, and sea level is already increasing at a rate of over a foot a century, but that's expected to accelerate somewhat, and that means many coastal regions, and there are huge numbers of people living in areas that are apt to be affected, and tremendous infrastructure damage can occur. we're already seeing sunny day flooding in places like Miami and Norfolk, Virginia, and various other places. This is apt to get worse, and there are other countries around the world, low-lying areas, Bangladesh and many other places in Southeast Asia, that are in serious trouble.
They will go underwater.
Yes. That's the sort of thing, again, which creates refugees. They no longer have a place where they used to live. So where do they go?
In the worst case, in the last half of the 21st century, what do you see happening?
Well, this is the worry, that there are increased conflicts. And the question then is whether the regional conflicts actually become sufficient that they grow into the next world war. You hate to even think about that when there are nuclear weapons around in various places, but those are the worries that people really don't even talk about.
And what you mean is humans will be fighting over water and food and land.
Yes. I think the outlook, if we keep on our current path, is not good.
Not good at all, is it?
No, and I think that people should really take a look at 2018 with a very, very serious context, that this is kind of for openers. And I remember working in Boston and doing an interview with a climate scientist at Harvard University in 1976. And he was working on just very rudimentary computer projections at that time. But I still remember in that interview so long ago, his saying that the way things were going, that in another 20, 30 years, that we could be facing a tipping point where we were pushing the Earth into an ever-increasing warming, and that's exactly what we're talking about now.
Linda, what do you think of the possibility, too, that the sun is heating up, and it doesn't have to heat up by much to create all kinds of problems here?
Well, but the opposite is happening. We're at a solar minimum. There have been scientists that have been having dinner bets with each other about whether we're going to go into a Maunder minimum. If we go into a Maunder minimum, the sun could decrease in its brightness. That's the energy that it releases, by approximately 1%. That doesn't sound like much, but it would be a cooling. And that, so we are not, we cannot in this instance blame the sun for anything that is happening on Earth.
What about the solar system, though? Isn't it heating up too?
I've heard people kick around those sentences, and I don't know the data that it's based on. I think 3 or 4 years ago that somebody was saying that Mars was heating up. Well, I've never seen any data that would suggest that. So I don't know where that came from.
It's unbelievable. I think the biggest problem is going to be the water source. Once that goes, everybody's in trouble.
Well, he makes that final great point, or sad point, that what are people going to do that lose the land by water? They go under land, and they lose territory. Who takes them in? Where do we go? And that the future of the planet could be like Mad Max, increasing
exactly.
Numbers of fights over the little bits of resources that some areas will have, while other places they will be walls built to keep people out who are starving to death. And all of this, what can we do to prevent this kind of a future?
There will be riots. There will be all kinds of mayhem out of control. I mean, we saw what happened just with Hurricane Katrina. Government was not able to handle the load.
That's right. Exactly. And the fires of 2018, if this is just the beginning and it gets worse and worse, can you imagine what summer would be like for the West? And what is going to happen? There were so many houses burned. And if next year it's incrementally more, and then the year after, you would think that all of this, like the writing is on the wall, and we must do something to slow down the CO2 buildup of this planet.
When we come back, we'll talk with Linda about our friend John Greenwald in his Black Vault of UFOs. And welcome back to Coast, Linda Moulton Howe with us, and of course our joint dear friend John Greenwall, who heads up the Black Vault. What's John up to these days, Linda?
Well, you know, he's been producing the Black Vault website since 1996, a challenge he started at age 15 with the goal to file FOIA requests on UFO-related subjects and then to report about whatever documents he received. And then, as if following John's lead, the FBI eventually, in 2011, created their own online document archive, and guess what they called it? The Vault. John had the Black Vault, and the FBI put up the Vault. Even though the FBI Vault gives the impression that everything the FBI has on a particular person or topic is there in the digital archive, that is not true. Even though the FBI has released hundreds of thousands of pages since 2011, last month in July 2018, John discovered that the FBI documents about cattle mutilations were not complete. So he filed a FOIA request to see what else the FBI had on the animal mutilation mystery that I've been investigating since September of 1979, when I was producing the 90-minute special A Strange Harvest for the CBS station in Denver. That documentary first aired on May 25, 1980, and received a regional Emmy. During my investigations, I had sheriffs, deputies, and ranchers tell me that the mutilation perpetrators were, quote, creatures from outer space, close quote. And why did they say that? Because they were seeing with their own eyes completely silent objects in the sky over pastures that looked like small airplanes or helicopters, but they would dissolve away into misty clouds. Further, ranchers reported to sheriff's offices that beams of light were coming down from glowing objects in the night sky, and some ranchers had even seen one of their cows rise in a beam of light or be lowered in a beam of light to the ground dead and bloodlessly mutilated. So who or what was placing those silent images of helicopters and small planes in the sky that could dissolve away in a misty cloud or patch of ionized air? This question has come up again in a few never-seen-before animal mutilation documents dated 1979 to 1980 and released for the first time in July 2018 by the FBI to John Greenwald and the Black Vault. Here now from Castaic, California, is John Greenwald, owner and producer of the largest private citizen-run online repository of declassified government documents in the world.
To my surprise, the cattle mutilation mystery and animal mutilation documents that the FBI posted was not complete. And so I filed a Freedom of Information Act request trying to see what else they had. I did that in July of this year, and as a response, I got new documents that had never been out before. They come from 79. This is the same era that a lot of the other documents that they have released come from. And the reason I bring that up is because it supports the fact that the FBI strategically did not release these records for a reason. And I think that once you get into the documents and you start seeing exactly what the document has on it, you can kind of get a better picture of why they were essentially covering it up.
And John, I'm looking at October 31st, 1979 as a date on the first document that you had sent.
Yeah.
It says, the FBI bureau chief in the Butte, Montana office transmitted an Airtel message to the FBI director in Washington, D.C. In part, it said the Butte office was, quote, investigating approximately 12 cases of cattle mutilations in the name blacked out area. A helicopter is being used for the purpose of lifting cattle from one area to the other, and then at the location where the cattle are placed, mutilations are performed, such as removing the sex organs of the animal or the brains, or in some cases, only bleeding of the animal with no further removal of organs. The meat has apparently not been taken for use. Blacked out name advised that witnesses have observed a helicopter in the area transporting carcasses. The helicopter has been described as a Bell 47, gunmetal gray in color, with black letters on the side of the body. The first two digits in the registration number are NZ. No further numbers observed, close quote. So what are the facts on what cattle weigh and what maximum weight could a Bell 47 helicopter pick up? About cattle weights, here is what longtime cattle raiser Alex Peterson says after decades of owning and operating the Windmill Angus Ranch in Hagler, Nebraska.
A full-size mature bull should weigh 2,500 to 2,800 pounds, and in really good condition, up to 3,000 pounds. An adult, full-grown, mature female that's pregnant, anywhere from 1,500 to 1,800 pounds, and a mature adult female, 1,300 to 1,500-pound range.
Could Bell 47 helicopters in 1979 lift up a 2,500-pound bull or an 1,800-pound pregnant cow or 1,500-pound non-pregnant female? I asked John Greenwald, and he introduced me to retired U.S. Air Force Major David W. Aiken. He served in the Vietnam War in 1967 to 1968, where all kinds of helicopters, including the Bell 47, were in action. Major Aiken also knows how the Bell 47 should be registered in the United States. Here now from his home in eastern Florida is Major David Aiken.
There's never been an aircraft in the U.S. registered NZ. So obviously, if somebody was using that helicopter, they didn't want it identified, and they changed the number. They altered it. I took what they call the empty weight or dry weight. That's without any people on board and no fuel. Okay, so you got to calculate how much your fuel weighs and how much you weigh and how much your passengers weigh, and you add that to the empty weight, and it better come out below the maximum lift weight. Subtract one from the other, and then you come up with a maximum payload of 1,057 pounds.
Which is less than all three categories of a cattle raiser's average weights ranging from 2,500 to 1,500 pounds.
Correct.
Within the next few weeks, the FBI's own field investigations confirmed the FAA did not have any helicopter registration numbers beginning NZ. So there never was any such Bell 47 helicopter lifting up cattle. Finally, in a January 9, 1980 document just released in July 2018 to John Greenwald's FOIA request, the Butte, Montana FBI Bureau Chief stated, quote, "At this time, no further logical investigation remains to be conducted in the United States in this matter," signed J.E. Bailey, Butte, Montana FBI Special Agent in Charge, close quote. So, what the FBI learned privately, but never reported publicly, were the actual facts about what maximum weight a Bell 47 could lift versus what adult cattle weigh. John Greenwald and I talked about the timeline of animal mutilations being reported long before 1979. Animal mutilations were being reported and photographed from the 1960s. So from 60 to 79, you're talking about 20 years of animal mutilations being reported not only in the United States, but throughout North America and around the world. And the FBI and the CIA knew that.
Mm-hmm.
There is the testimony of people like Lou Girodo working in the DA's office in Trinidad, Colorado. And his job was to get to the bottom of all the animal mutilations that were happening in southern Colorado. Mm-hmm. And he personally describes his interviews with ranchers and people who saw what they thought was a helicopter or a fixed-wing plane that dissolved into a cloud and disappeared.
Yeah, and I think that the FBI knows outright that they can't explain this mystery. What was the motive for them to keep this a secret? What's interesting is there's no classification stamp on these documents. But obviously something was there for them to withhold the release initially in that big packet of information that they've released prior. And it does make you question, well, since the whole basis of this explanation slash investigation for these cases with the Bell 47 and what's done by a human and so on, when you actually research that and find out that none of that can be true, it makes you question, what exactly are they trying to hide? You know, is this some kind of secret technology? Is it something much more sinister that they know that they can't readily identify or at least explain?
Back in 1975, 4 years before the FBI memos about trying to blame people in Bell 47 helicopters for the bloodless mutilations, at Wurtsmith Air Force Base in northern Michigan, U.S. Air Force Major David Aiken had his own experience with UFOs, in the Air Force saying even then that they were helicopters.
UFOs came over at night over Wurtsmith Air Force Base in northern Michigan. Would have been October 75. These UFOs, the first one came in over the front gate, hovered over the front gate, shone a light down onto the guard standing there. His supervisor was there also. They were engulfed in this light. These UFOs went out to the flight line. We call it the Christmas tree. It was the alert pad where the loaded bombers sat alert. They saw it out there. The entire episode was quickly covered up, and they decided that it was helicopters. Well, there are no helicopters. The little town there was Oscoda, Michigan. There were no helicopters in Oscoda. So, you know, it was obvious a cover-up.
Why do you think, from your years in the Air Force, now a retired U.S. Air Force major, why has there been an obsession by our government to cover up every UFO, ET-related incident, have policies of denial and non-disclosures that have kept people quiet to their death?
And we can't do a thing.
But, sir, if people are given information and education about most subjects, it makes them stronger, not weaker?
I would agree there.
If these kinds of advanced technologies that have been demonstrated in the last two centuries, let alone maybe thousands of years, if they had any desire to eliminate Homo sapiens sapiens, they could have done it easily.
Oh, certainly. Way back when.
We seem to be serving some kind of purpose for an advanced alien intelligence or intelligences.
Yeah, and that itself is kind of scary, but there isn't a thing we can do about it except sit back and observe, I guess. There's stories out there that some kind of a deal was struck, like the Granada Treaty, that allows them to live and work here as long as they don't cause too much trouble.
Right.
Yeah, that's there are a lot of phenomena that we can't explain any other way. Orange fireballs are big here in Florida. Have you heard about those?
Oh, the orange fireballs have been one of the most common denominators to the UFO phenomenon. And in the animal mutilations, there were deputy sheriffs who told me when the orange spheres that look like fire show up, we always have animal mutilations.
After I retired, I volunteered for the sheriff's department. And one New Year's Eve, I was out coming down the avenue, and I was by the civilian airport. And through my windshield, I see this orange fireball coming at me. My first thought was it was an aircraft on fire. But then I realized that there were no kind of wings or tail or anything, just this orange sphere. I stopped the patrol car. I got out, and I watched this thing, and it moved probably maybe 100 miles an hour at a height of maybe 50 feet directly over my head. I watched it until it was way, way out over the Gulf of Mexico, and just a little white dot in the sky, and kind of disappeared. Perfectly straight line, never gained or lost altitude, never changed course. Weirdest thing in the world. Completely silent.
Hmm.
And, you know, I'm thinking back at interviewing a rancher in the Colorado Springs area of Colorado when I was producing A Strange Harvest for the CBS station. And he and his wife were telling me that one night she yelled to him and said, "Oh, my God, the barn is on fire." And the husband took off running. He said he ran probably 300 feet. And the whole time he's running, he is seeing what he thinks are flames above his barn. And when he gets to the barn, the orange flames lifted straight up in the air, and then he realized it was a huge, huge aerial craft that was glowing with the same kind of orange color as fire. And then the object took off at tremendous speed, leaving him and his wife standing there knowing, as he told me, he said, whatever this is, it is not made here on Earth.
That's a great, could you imagine seeing that come up out of your barn?
Oh. Yeah, and with your wife screaming, the barn is on fire, and you're running, and then the fire takes off in the sky and rips away.
Linda, the holiday season will be rapidly approaching us, and of course, we'll go through that schedule a little bit later on and let all our listeners know when you'll be on, okay?
All right. Yeah.
Any trips coming up for you?
Yes, I have a variety of trips going into the fall. I'm going to be doing Alien Con in Baltimore, which is associated with Ancient Aliens History Channel. We did one in Pasadena, and I guess it was so successful they turned around and decided they wanted to do Baltimore. And I'm really looking forward to it because so few of these events have seemed, anyway, in the past, to take place on the East Coast. And since they have now announced that I and others are going to be in Baltimore at the Baltimore Convention Center November 9th, 10th, and 11th, I'm just hearing from everybody saying, oh, yay, and people are going to be driving up from places way far south and down north into Baltimore. So it could be really one of those great events.
Super. And next half, we're going to be talking about a rancher from Nebraska with some strange things happening on his ranch, huh?
Yes. The mutilations have never stopped, and right now we're in another one of those cycles. There are fresh mutilations in Argentina right now that are as eerily bloodless and dry and yet with these precise removals of tissue as I've ever seen. There are cat mutilations that are going on in Washington State, Houston, possibly Florida, and certainly around London. The number now officially of the half cats and the ones that have had just their spines removed is now over 500 in the greater London region.
500, amazing. Back with more on Coast to Coast AM.